So we were following the story on Sunday morning when people woke up to learn of terrorist arrests in Denver and New York. And as the week has progressed, we've learned more details about that investigation. And again, leaders try to comfort us and warn us at the same time. Here's New York Police Commissioner Ray Kelly with a sort of contradictory tone. Listen carefully here.
We have not engaged in any different practices or increased our security. As I say, we do a lot every day. We devote 1,000 police officers, actually over 1,000 police officers every day, to protect this city from a terrorist threat. So we have not increased those that number of resources.
So we have arrests. There is a threat, but it's not an active threat. We're not doing anything different. We have to be more vigilant. The contradictory messages emerge every time there's one of these arrests. And here to talk about, first of all, the details of these latest plots that investigators are looking at and the nature of what the consumers are supposed to do here is Christopher Dickey, Newsweek's Middle East regional editor, author of Securing the City, Inside America's Best Counterterrorism Force, the NYPD. He joins us from France. Christopher Dickey, good morning.
Hi, good morning, John.
And Lydia Khalil, former counterterrorism analyst at the NYPD and international affairs fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, joins us from New York. Good morning, Lydia.
Good morning.
First of all, Christopher, let's talk about the details of these plots, which actually are disturbing and are reminiscent of some other targeting of transit systems around the world, including Spain and London. What do we know?
Well, there's a lot of suspicious activity. The first thing we know is that the key figure in this, Najibullah Zazi, the 24-year-old Afghan, has been back and forth to the tribal areas of Pakistan and Afghanistan a couple of times in the last couple of years. There are three kind of plots that the police really worry about. One is an al-Qaeda core plot where you got bin Laden giving orders saying, you know, try and blow up big buildings. Another is the homegrown plot like the Herald Square bombers back in 2004, who really are pretty ineffectual but are still potentially dangerous. But since the London bombings and since Madrid, the biggest worry often is homegrown plots where people connect with people in Pakistan or Afghanistan who can show them how to make real bombs. That's what happened in London in July of 2005, and that's clearly what they were afraid was going to happen here, especially when they started to find that a lot of backpacks had been acquired, the kinds of things that you leave lying around on subway cars or train cars. That's exactly what happened in Madrid. It wasn't even a suicide bombing, but almost 200 people were killed.
Well, Lydia Khalil, the challenge for urban areas then is not to simply wait for the backpacks to show up and try to assemble countermeasures at that point, but you really need to have cops on the beat in Peshawar, correct? Lydia?
In a way, yes. In a way, yes. You know, the New York Police Department has been very, very proactive in facing these kind of threats. And not only in New York City, but they've extended their reach abroad as well. They do that by having intelligence liaisons overseas, and they try to get plugged into the threat before it manifests itself out in New York City.
Now, you know, this week we've got the United Nations meeting, and I'm wondering if this case really sets up the classic competitive posture between an organization like the FBI, an investigative organization, and the NYPD, which really has its major responsibility to protect the citizens of New York. Christopher Dickey, the NYPD felt that it had to move and do the arrests that it undertook over the weekend because it was worried about these attacks possibly being timed for the UN meetings here. But is that an appropriate response, and does the FBI have a point that maybe the NYPD should have waited?
Well, this is not entirely clear who did what, when, and for what reasons, but it used to be thought that you either had law enforcement trying to prosecute terrorists and criminals after the fact, which certainly after 9/11 wasn't good enough, or you had intelligence agencies that just like to sort of watch what's happening, and they let things play out sort of endlessly. But there's a third option, and that's to disrupt plots. And the intelligence division of the NYPD traditionally has put its focus on disrupting plots. It spots people that it thinks may be involved in a plot, and it goes after them to intimidate them, to recruit them, and only very rarely to try and arrest and convict them. Mm. Whether that was what was going on here isn't completely clear, but they have a long record of doing that, and the FBI seems to have had a slightly different idea of how it wanted to pursue the case.
Christopher Dickey is Newsweek's Middle East regional editor. He's the author of Securing the City, Inside America's Best Counterterror Force, the NYPD. So Lydia Khalil, former counterterrorism analyst at the NYPD, that's a frightening trade-off. Do you disrupt, or do you arrest, or do you wait for the really big fish? And we should sort of grisly remind people that the London investigators really got some big fish after those horrible attacks in London, but it doesn't make people in London feel any better, right, Lydia?
Exactly. It's always a trade-off that law enforcement and intelligence officials have to deal with. But in this particular case, it seems like it was a matter of crossed wires between the FBI and the NYPD. Both organizations were working with different informants, and it seems like an NYPD informant tipped off the main suspect in this case, Zazi, and which is why the arrests had to be moved up a little bit. Normally, I think even the NYPD Intelligence Division, as Mr. Dickey said, is very proactive, would have probably waited a little bit longer to conduct these arrests had it not been for these cross wires and this tip-off. Now, we're never going to know just exactly how big this case is because of this early arrest. And we're never going to know exactly who else may be involved. So this early arrest presents us with a problem in terms of outlining the scope of this case and what the actual threat is.
Christopher Dickey, are the protocols worked out of how an NYPD shares information with an FBI, if they're using different informants, or how an FBI alerts an NYPD?
Oh, well, they're supposed to be, but no, they're not that well worked out. There's been a lot of tension over time. It's supposed to be better now. They always say it's better than it was. But David Cohen, who's the head of the Intelligence Division for the NYPD, famously tells his people there's no such thing as sharing intelligence. There's only trading intelligence.
Mm. All right. To Christopher Dickey, Newsweek's Middle East regional editor, and Lydia Khalil, former counterterrorism analyst at the NYPD and international affairs fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, Celeste, how many web surfers does it take to make a grilled cheese sandwich?
Hmm? I don't know, but that could really mess up with your computer fan.
It's not a riddle. It's a reality. Wiki recipes. What if committees online and social networking spaces shared their expertise and came up with a composite recipe? We want to hear yours on grilled cheese sandwiches. 877-8-MY-TAKE. We'll talk more in 10 minutes.